The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam. Fourth Canto, Chapter Number 22, Text Number 7. Given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Dasat Hikari. Recorded on April 9th, 2018, in Pune, India.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Prithu Uvacha Aho Acharitam Kim me mangalam mangala ayana yashya va darshanam hi asit durdarshanam cha yogi bi prithur uvacha Aho acharitam kim me mangalam mangalayana yashyava darshanam hyasid tadarshanam cha yogibhi pritur uvacha Aho acharitam kim me Mangalam Mangalayana Yashava Darshanam Hyasid Durdarshanam Jayogibi Prithu Uvacha. King Prithu spoke, Aho, O Lord, Acharitam, practice. Kim, what may by me mangalam, good fortune, mangala ayana, O personified good fortune, yashya, by which va your darshanam, audience, he certainly asit. Became possible. Dirdarshanam, visible with great difficulty. Cha, also, yogibhi, by great mystic yogis. Translation in purport, by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. King Prithu said, My dear great sages, auspiciousness personified, it is very difficult for even the mystic yogis to see you. Indeed, you are very rarely seen. I do not know what kind of pious activity I performed for you to grace us by appearing before me without difficulty. Purport, when something uncommon happens in one's progressive spiritual life, it should be understood to be incurred by agyatu sukriti, or pious activities beyond one's knowledge. To see personally the Supreme Personality of Godhead or His pure devotee is not an ordinary incident. When such things happen, they should be understood to be caused by previous pious activity, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 7:28, Yesham Tvantagatam Papam, Jananam Punyakarmanam. One who is completely freed from all the resultant actions of sinful activities, and who is absorbed only in pious activities, can engage in devotional service. Although Maharaj Prithu's life was full of pious activities, he was wondering how his audience with the Kumaras happened. He cannot imagine what kind of pious activities he had performed. This is a sign of humility on the part of King Prithu, whose life was so full of pious activities that even Lord Vishnu came to see him and predicted that the Kumaras would also come. So my natural reaction when I read this is I was thinking, well, I met Prabhupada, how's that possible? And actually, we were very impious. How's it possible that I can meet Prabhupada? See him many times in different places, have personal correspondence with him, everything. Is it inconceivable? I just take it as special mercy. I can't imagine how I could be qualified, you see. But it's stated here. And something uncommon happens in one's progressive spiritual life. It should be understood, be incurred by Yajnata Sukriti. So, the point here is everything's connected. Everything that's happening to you now is a result of things you did in the past. Nothing is happening by accident. So, the intelligent person then can understand, just as my past created my present is creating my future. So to actually engage in devotional service, which is higher than pious activities. Pious activities, that's also something material. Piety and impiety, that's material. But devotional service is transcendental. So we can't even begin to imagine the auspicious results we're going to get from engaging in devotional service. So if you have any difficulties in devotional service, don't let them bring you down. We have a saying called, you're sitting pretty. You're sitting pretty right now, being engaged in devotional service in a very, very auspicious situation. And you're creating auspiciousness beyond, unimaginable auspiciousness is coming from what you're doing right now, you see. So don't be discouraged by the ups and downs of daily life in devotional service. Just stay engaged in devotional service. By doing so, you're creating an inconceivably sublime, auspicious future for yourself. And what you're doing is having an impact on the entire material existence. As we studied yesterday. I was explaining yesterday. So, it's stated actually in Prabhupada's books, pure devotional service is the beginning of all auspiciousness. Auspicious means for the benefit of all living entities. So by engaging here in devotional service, chanting Hare Krishna, following regulated principles, serving the deities, engaging in the preaching mission given by Prabhupada, you see, you're bestowing the greatest blessings upon all living entities throughout this entire material existence. So don't ever become discouraged by the daily ups and downs. Well, I did this and I got chastised and now I'm feeling bad, or whatever. You see. Just remain equipoised to the ups and downs that we go through as neophytes. You see. Just remain equipoised. Understand that you're on the right track, you're on the most auspicious position. This is better than being a demigod in the heavenly planets. To be engaged here in Prabhupada's mission, you see. Better than being a demigod in the higher planet. You see. Just take it as the greatest blessing and steadily engage in devotional service. Day in, day after day. It's not some dull, boring routine. It's actually a mystical experience. You're reawakening your lost loving relationship with Krishna by every act that you do, every round you chant, every prasad you honor, every class you hear, every class you give, every arti you attend, every arti you offer, every offering you cook, all of these things. Every time you circumambulate the temple, every little thing we do, it's adding up. It's adding up to the most auspicious, inconceivable blessings. We can't even conceive of the results of these simple activities, what we're doing. Inconceivably sublime. So if there's any questions, I can try to answer them. Only three questions today. Devotional service is itself pure. And my Śrīla Prabhupāda in the 18th chapter of the Gita says one must perform pure devotional service in Krishna consciousness. Well, devotional service can also be mixed with sense gratification. I want this, 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 so I engage in quote, devotional service. Not really devotional service. So many people come to the temple, you know, and they say, they're praying. It's like we have that little song that makes fun of it, you know. Give me a Cadillac, a brand new Cadillac, replete with Michelin tires. Give my wife a new silk sari. Give my kids a Harvard education. Give me a house by the sea. Om Jaya Jagadish Hari. And they think that's devotional service. I'm worshiping Krishna. So there is a thing, you know, worshiping for material fulfillment. People do it all the time. That's what's going on in every religion, in Hinduism, Christianity, Judaism. You see, they're praying for material things. So that's not pure devotional service. We have to learn how to come to purely before Krishna in mood of complete surrender. Now, my dear Lord, I belong to you. You can take away whatever you want to give, take away from me. You can give me whatever you want to engage in your service. I'm just completely under you now. Whatever you want to do with me is fine. You see, that's the move. But it takes time to develop that. Of course, you could develop it instantly. But we're so conditioned to thinking I'm the center of enjoyment. The universe revolves around me. We're so conditioned to this egotism that it takes some time for us to get free of it. Okay. Why do N.S. counselors? N.S. counselors? I've never heard of an N.S. counselor. It's some acronym within the community here? What is N.S. stand for? Nityananda Samadhi.
Those aspiring to become grihasthas.
Those aspiring to become?
Grihasthas.
Grihasthas. Oh, okay. Now I know what now I'm learning. I know what an NS counselor is. Say that the dharma of grihasthas to have children by sex. No, it's an option. If the counselors are saying you have to have sex, they haven't read Prabhupada's books carefully. It's an option. Prabhupada very clearly states in one letter. You can look in the Veda base. I can show you the letter if I had my computer here. Prabhupada directly says that you're not required to have children because you're married. I mean, if that was a fact, I'd be in Maya because I didn't have any children. I'm married. I didn't have any children. But actually, you have 300 children by preaching. It's called the greater sex. Okay. All right. The place where I stay is yoga. What is that? Is what is that word? Yoga?
It's yoga.
All these, don't give me these acronyms, you know. Anyway, it's difficult to sleep before 9 p.m. because of the noise and the light. Those gave me my sleep at 9:15 p.m. To something, 5 hours. I'm 25 years old. I want to chant for Om Lati. The thing is, you know, if you really have a desire to, Krishna will facilitate you. I remember our head cook in Atlanta, Ramanotsuka Prabhu. He was very busy. He went to the kitchen right after Mangal Arti. He's in the kitchen all day. He was a great cook. I mean, he's fantastic. The devotees loved his prasadam. He was like a superstar for all the brahmacharis. They loved his cooking. So he had a very good program. He would get up at 2 a.m. He'd chant all of his rounds before Mangal Arti. And then he would take a nap during breakfast prasadam when the ashram was completely quiet. You could set your watch by his nap. He was so regulative. So I'm sure you can find a way to do it. If you just have to be like Ramana Sukha, be practical and see some system. He took a nap every day during breakfast. He skipped breakfast. And he didn't, he took a nice lunch, of course. So yeah, you can find a way to do it. To have you facilitate early morning japa, I'm sure you can find a way. I complete my 16 rounds daily, and I try my best. That sounds a little scary. I don't really do it, but I try my best to follow the four regulated principles. I try my best, you have to understand. I'm a little worried when I see that. And I feel this much is sufficient. Of course, if he's strictly following them, that's good. But when he says, I'm trying to follow them, then I get a little worried. Yeah, I'm trying. That word try scares me a little bit. Anyway, let's see what he actually said. I feel that is sufficient. It is a good, in the long run, or should one endeavor for more? Yeah. Not in the long run, but right now you should endeavor for more, and that's to avoid the 10 offenses. When Prabhupada gave initiation, the 10 offenses would also be mentioned. So, follow the four rules, send 16 rounds, and avoid the 10 offenses. You see. That's how you become solid and fixed up and advanced devotee. If you follow the four rules, but you don't avoid the 10 offenses, you're going to remain a neophyte for many lifetimes. Many lifetimes. So you got to follow the 10 offenses. Also, as a householder, how should I maintain a proper balance and not get disturbed by earning a livelihood? The best thing is to get your round done before you go to work every day. Have a very good, go to bed. As soon as you get home, wrap up your activities, take an early rest, and get up early and have very, very wonderful sadhana. And then go to work with your spiritual batteries fully charged. In one of Prabhupada's lectures on Canto 3, he says, quoting a verse, Putsahinam griha sunyam. Married life without a child is frustrated and void. Yeah, there is some, they say that married life without children is like a desert. Chanakya Pandit, there's a saying like that, and that's true. But Krishna consciousness is transcendental to that. That's mundane piety. It's transcendental. Because you may not, if a householder doesn't, if you're Krishna conscious, you have Krishna. So if Krishna is living in your house is certainly not a desert. So you don't have, children is an option. If you want to have children, it's great. Follow the principles. No illicit sex means sex once in a month, after 5 days after the menstrual cycle, after the husband and wife have both chanted 50 rounds of japa. And Prabhupada said also you get permissions from you, get blessings of your Guru Maharaj also, if that's practical for you. Prabhupada said also that should be done. From the life of Prithu Maharaj, we find that although being administrator king, enforcing discipline, he was still loved by everyone. How can a spiritual guide administrator follow this? Well, it's simple. The administrator should be loved by everyone. Well, how do you do that? You have to love everyone. You don't expect them to love you if you don't love them. If you love them, they will love you. It's a simple thing. When one is serving devotees as a leader, what does it mean to be independently thoughtful? That may be stated somewhere, I don't remember. Independently thoughtful. But the thing is, you have to be able to judge things according to time, place, and circumstance. Of course, it's in line with scripture, but you have to be able to adjust to see things according to time, place, and circumstance. Prabhupada said you didn't have any qualification for DS. Oh boy, another acronym. And made you qualified. Devotional service, okay. I figured that one out. No qualification for devotional service and made you qualified. Papa told me I'm not qualified for devotional service. I remember that. Maybe a general statement. There's a general statement that is the mood of the Vaishnavas. The Vaishnava feels I am completely unqualified to engage in devotional service. I have no qualification. Kichu nahi mora guna, Bhaktivinoda says. I have no good qualities at all. Nahi. Nahi, nahi. No good qualities whatsoever. That's the mood of a Vaishnava. He feels I'm completely unqualified. But he's begging for the mercy, you see. It applies for all of us. We should all feel we have no qualification. It's just the mercy of Guru and Krishna and Vaishnavas that I'm here. It's not that, I'm really a great sadhu, y'all. You know, I'm really a great sadhu, that's why I'm here. You should all appreciate what a great sadhu I actually am. It's nonsense. Actually, I have no qualification. I'm just a mercy case. Prabhupada's mercy, somehow that I'm here by His grace. You see. Should always feel totally unqualified by the mercy of the Guru and Vaishnavas and Krishna. Somehow I'm here engaged in devotional service. That's the proper mood. When I do sadhana as His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada book reading, I feel Krishna conscious, but when I do some seva, I am not able to relate it with Krishna. Yeah. In other words, when you're hearing the philosophy or reading the books, you feel connected. When you're sweeping the floor, you're not feeling connected. That means you haven't gone deep enough into your philosophical understanding. Because when you actually have philosophical understanding, you will see how Krishna has blessed you with so many opportunities for devotional service. I remember when I was in Atlanta as a brahmachari, but it was one of our big scholars of the Bhaktivedanta Institute, Dr. Richard Thompson, Sadaputta Prabhu. He wrote so many books, Mechanistic and Non-Mechanistic Science. He was one of Prabhupada's chosen people to do the Bhaktivedanta Institute. A very big scholar. And he had his own office. He was spent the whole day doing research. He would come and clean and mop the kitchen floor. It was nice, you see. You know, he's a big, big scholar, but still he liked to do the practical work. Every evening he'd come and clean the kitchen. So you have to see the practical side of devotional service. The more you clean the temple, the more you clean your heart. So you may think, well, I don't really need to clean my heart because I'm already pure devotee. Then you're an illusion. You need to do these activities to clean your heart. That's the fact. Kindly explain what is Hridaya Durbhaya Asat Trishnam. How can I overcome them? Well, let's see. I don't know the Sanskrit that well to know what you're talking about. Somebody tell me, what is heart? See, hridaya is the heart. Darbhaya, what does that mean? Weakness of the heart means when your mind is not fixed on Krishna. So you overcome it. Yato yato nishchalate manas chanchana mastadam. Your mind goes away, you bring it back. And asat Krishna means... Hankering for something for madness is...
Temporary.
Which is material. Hankering for the temporary things. Well, we have to realize it's stupid to hanker for temporary things. Because even if you get it, you're not going to keep it. Somebody may hanker to be a big leader in this world, for example. And they may even get it. But they won't get Krishna, you see. So instead of asat Krishna, we want sat Krishna. Started working, waking up at 2 a.m. for the day. Okay. What should I do after the 16 pounds? That's wonderful. It's a wonderful question. Read the books. You can study. From 5:30 to 7:30, you can read Prabhupada's book. If you send you can do 2 hours a day of reading every day, really, you'd be able to go through all the books very nicely. So why not? Send you around early and study. Become a learned pundit in Krishna consciousness. That's really good. Okay. How much attachment one should have with family members? To see the greater family life, all living entities. You should be very attached to doing the greatest welfare work for your family members. That's the proper move. If you think this is my family member and this is not my family member, then you're an illusion. My material brother showed up on my Facebook page the other day. About his allergies. Actually, he invited me. See, he used to have a house. I'm in Austin, so he used to have a house in South Austin. But then he makes a lot of money, so he got a big acreage way out in the hill country, like the countryside, out there called Dripping Springs. He wanted me to come out and see his new house. He wanted to show off, you know, how successful he is materially, right? I said, yeah, we can come out and do some kirtan. He said, can we do something a little more serene? So I didn't go. I was willing to go do kirtan. But he doesn't want kirtan. I'm not going to go. You see what I'm saying? You can use their attachment to you to help them in Krishna consciousness. But if they're not interested, then you're not interested either. You understand? You can use their attachment to you to give them Krishna. But if they say no, then who cares? You know, I got so many other family members. And why have to worry about you? This one here? Yeah. Okay. What to do when pride comes in? Well, you may be more advanced than me because you're only saying when it comes in. Some of us have it all the time, and we're trying to figure out how to deal with that. You see, you only worry about when it comes in. So maybe I should learn from you how to deal when it comes in. I mean, sometimes he doesn't have it, sometimes he does have it. So I should learn from him. I have it all the time, so I'm trying to figure out how to get rid of the damn thing. But You just have to remember the giving up. We have to remember those of us who are suffering with this false egotism, thinking that we're great. We just have to realize that we're lower than the straw in the street. We should feel ourselves lower than the straw in the street. We should be willing to offer all respect to everybody without expecting any bit of respect for ourselves. This is Lord Chaitanya's teachings. Just apply Lord Chaitanya's teachings. Because once you become, put yourself in a really humble position, that I deserve nothing but being kicked in the face. That's what I deserve. That's not for Raja. You just have to be very, very contrite and feeling, actually, I deserve nothing but being kicked in the face for being such a demon. But let me offer all respect to others. We all have this problem. So we just have to understand how to solve it by cultivating humility and begging Krishna to free us from this false pride. If a devotee is an introvert, is it that he is impersonal? Introverts are actually very puffed up. Very puffed up. Or if a devotee is an extrovert, is it that he is personal? Actually, is he either introvert or extrovert in the extreme situation? In either case, is a lack of Krishna consciousness. An extrovert just wants to show off how great I am. Thinks that everybody is so contaminated, I don't want anyone to associate with them. So both cases are wrong. A devotee can go unlimitedly deep within himself, and he can also broadcast this message to the whole world if he has an opportunity. He can go both ways. He can go within and without. Bahir Nisinga, Hridaya Nisinga. Shingya within, Shingya without. The devotee can go unlimitedly deep within, and he can also broadcast unlimited all living energies of this world if he has a chance. That's the proper move. How to ensure that our dealings with devotees are personal? Cultivate these qualities for our progress in spiritual life, how to understand this. Just by cultivating Krishna consciousness, good qualities automatically come, but you can also consciously cultivate good qualities. So which should you do? Do both. That's the answer. It's like if you want a candle to burn down to nothing quickly, you light both ends, right? If you light both ends of the candle, then it burns down quickly. So you cultivate good qualities, at the same time cultivate Krishna consciousness, and that way you'll make very rapid advancement. How to keep Krishna in the center and remove myself from the center? You have to beg. Because if we have this egotistic tendency to think that we're the center of everything, and it blocks us from associating with Krishna. So we have to pray to Krishna, my dear Lord, please free me from this false egotism. Let me become completely submitted unto you. We have to beg Krishna to help us. By begging, begging, begging. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. My dear Radha and my dear Krishna, please bless me. I can always see you as the center of existence and not myself. You see, that's the meaning of one meaning of chanting Hare Krishna. If someone is unable to control his sex desire and wants to get realization by experience, that is bad. Then is it appropriate for him to get married? No. Shouldn't get married. If you want to turn your wife into a prostitute, you shouldn't get married. treat your wife as an angel, a devotee, a blessing from Krishna. Now, if you want to marry to use your wife as a sex machine, forget it. You should just stay brahmachari. Curb down your lusty thoughts. You shouldn't exploit women like this. Women are like goddesses of fortune, actually. If you treat them properly, they're goddesses of fortune. You should never get married just because you want to have sex, 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 sex. That's very bad. Okay. How to give up the false ego of bodily identification? By engaging in devotional service, 24/7. I have heard that taking bath before Brahma Muhurta, generally around 3 a.m., is offensive.
It is?
Is it stated that way somewhere in the scriptures? Before Brahma Muhurta, take bath. Is anybody in a verse like that? Maybe I'm safe because I get up early at 2 a.m. I chant, I announce first, and then I take baths. So maybe I'm safe. I guess I'm safe. I chant, you know, I take baths just to. I first thing I just chant my rounds, take a mental bath and then a physical bath. So it's interesting. I've forgotten about that thing. I'm not sure how strict that is for us. Okay. How can I follow pure brahmachari in the brahmachari ashram? That's an interesting question. Tapasa brahmacharena sagena cha chamena cha. Boom. Actually, it's very nice to be able, want to be a pure brahmachari. That means every woman is your mother. That's the meaning of brahmachari. Every woman is my mother. That's what brahmachari life means. Every single woman is my mother. In my dealings with them, but we don't talk much. Prabhupada said, when I was a young brahmachari, I wrote Prabhupada about what is the proper behavior for a brahmachari. That letter went in every temple's bulletin board. Prabhupada answered my letter. He said, talk almost nil. If you have a need to talk with a woman for your service or whatever, Prabhupada said, talk almost nil. I mean, you, as little as possible. You don't start having a chatting, you see. Brahmachari doesn't chat with women, you see. Even as a grihastha, actually a vanaprastha, I don't chat with women, you see. Talk almost nil. And see, every woman is mother. Huh?
Brahmachari having the earrings.
Is it brahmachari?
Wearing the earring.
Brahmachari is wearing an earring. He wants to be a gypsy or a brahmachari? Yeah, that's a new fashion now, and the earrings. He wants to be, I mean, see, you say, well, in the Vedic culture they wore earrings. That's what the kshatriyas, not the Brahmins. A Brahmin doesn't wear jewelry, okay? A nose ring or an earring or all this stuff. No. We don't wear this stuff. Actually, it's an interesting story in this connection. I've been a hippie before, and hippies wore earrings. So you can still see I have a pierced ear. I actually had an earring, and I moved into the temple with an earring. And the devotees, they said I had to give it up, and I was really attached to my earring. So what I put a picture of Lord Chaitanya on the earring so he wouldn't complain. But then I gave it up, you know. I realized this is nonsense. I just threw it away in the garbage can to find it. So yeah, these are material attachments, you know. Earrings. I mean, what is this nonsense? Want to tell us some more? Go ahead. It's sense gratification. It definitely is. It's like sex life. A brahmachari wearing an ear is like sex life. He's worshipping his body. You know, it's not like he's And he thinks he's some kind of a deity or something like that, you know. Like you decorate the deity, right? Our decoration is Kanti Mala and Tilak. That's our decoration. That's bona fide. But these other things, it's simply bogus. I'm trying to remember some examples of Prabhupada. You know, another thing, Prabhupada was so strict. You know how some devotees take the Brahmin's bread, prasadam, deity, and they put it on their wrist? You know what Prabhupada said? You can read it in the Veda base. He saw devotees doing this in Vrindavan. Prabhupada said, what is this? He said, oh, Prabhupada, they're taking the deity prasadam, Brahmin's bread, and putting it on their wrist. Prabhupada said, stop this. Can you imagine? Prabhupada was so strict, even the deity prasadam, Brahmin's bread, Prabhupada said, to stop it. So what is the thing of earrings, you see? So, yeah, some more points you'd like to bring? Okay. Feel free to add anything. She has very good perspectives. I'm more book knowledge. She's more down-to-earth practical. Chanting... So, chanting 50 rounds, husband and wife, does it mean both separately and individually after the chant? That they could just chant 25 each, right? And add up to 50. Now, don't try to cheat on the process. The husband has to, and the wife, both have to chant 50 rounds. That's the Prabhupada's order. Don't try to take, you know, cheat. If a brahmachari is not lusty, feels attracted towards the affection given by the wife and children. Wait. How's he a brahmachari if he has wife and children? This is a grahastha, not a brahmachari. What are you talking about, you? Well, you could say a grahastha brahmachari. All right. If a grahastha brahmachari is not lusty, it feels... Actually, Prabhupada said that... there's a natural affection for a householder to have for his wife and kids. If it's on the spiritual level, there's no harm in them, you see. We just read the other day, Prabhupada was saying that. It's not that you hate your wife or, you know, you don't want to... No, there's a friendship, a spiritual friendship. But it's not based on the body, it's based on devotional service. Then it's all right. You can have... You can like your wife, you can love your wife. Just like we love our God brothers, you can love your wife also, but in a spiritual way, not for some lusty thing. In an advanced age, later, if such nature comes out, it becomes difficult to change ashrams and get settled. I don't know what he means exactly, but the thing is, we have to love devotees. That's loving exchanges are there with my God brothers. Even my God sisters in a very restricted, limited way. Certainly I'm very respectful to them. I don't mix with them intimately, but they're my mothers. I see them as my God sisters, mothers. I respect them very much. I love them as my mothers, not as some sex object. So this loving exchange is there between all. With my wife, I love her. I don't have any kids, but I have disciples. So this loving feeling is a natural thing. Loving exchanges are meant to be there because the more you love devotees, the more you love Krishna. But it has to be spiritual, for pleasing Krishna, not for sense gratification. Yeah. Want to add anything?
One can change.
A brahmachari can become a grahastha. Go ahead. A brahmachari should not. Married life is that's at the age of 25 they enter a married life by the Vedic system. 25 years as a brahmachari, then at the age of 25 You can have married life if he wants. But if you're an old brahmachari, forget it. A 45-year-old brahmachari wants to get married, forget it. I mean, forget it. It's ridiculous. That's a young man. See, 25-year-old, like around that age, he can get married. Is that what you were driving at? Was that the point you were trying to make? Okay. Prabhupada had children. Did they follow the instructions? They didn't come out so good. He got much better children by preaching than he did by his family life. I mean, they're pious, but they're not like great devotees. Did Prabhupada follow what he preaches during his family life? I mean, what kind of question is that? Did Prabhupada practice what he preaches during his own family life? How you can even ask such a question? A great pure devotee who's come to this world on the order of Krishna? I mean, how you can ask such a question? Shocked you would ask such a question. I didn't even try to answer that. Yeah, his wife is not very Krishna conscious. Radharani Devi, she was not very Krishna conscious. Everyone knows, you all may know the story that there was a system in those days in Calcutta that for tea biscuits, right? Yeah. You could trade something of equal weight. So Prabhupada was writing, was it Gita or Bhagavatam? Gita. He had a whole manuscript of Gita. And she traded it for tea biscuits. Can you imagine? She gave away his manuscript to work on for months and months and months, maybe years. She gave it away, traded it for tea biscuits. To see what a kind of wife he had. He said, shh.
And Prabhupada was told before marriage, he did not want to get married. His father said, this will help you. This marriage will help you to take up the Krishna and follow you what you want to do.
And finally, she wouldn't give up drinking tea. And that's against our principles. Prabhupada said, finally one day gave her the ultimatum, tea or me? She said, well, if it's tea and me, I guess I'll have to give up my husband. She didn't realize he was serious. And then he took some yas. She said, I'll give up my husband instead of giving up tea. So Prabhupada took some yas. Okay. One friend was telling me that the Pandavas ate cow after killing the Hidimba demon in the forest. I know, anybody remember reading that the Pandavas ate cow? I've never heard of such a thing. How to understand animals killed for food in Mahabharata Ramayana. I'm not familiar with animals being killed for food. I'm not learned in that field.
This is called Buddhism. Buddhists also took up that Brahmanas are putting their old cow into the sacrifice to rejuvenate and test themselves.
That is there, yeah, that's right.
And then the Buddhists took it.
Thanks for reminding me of that. In the Vedic system, they had a, what is it called, Go something?
Go-meda?
Yagya? Yeah. They would take an old cow and put it into a sacrificial fire, not for eating the cow. That old cow would become rejuvenated. It was a test of the power of their mantras. They could take an old cow, put it into the fire, come out as a young calf, rejuvenation. It wasn't cow killing, it was cow rejuvenation. Just imagine if we could do that nowadays in ISKCON. We have a fire yogi, and the old people can come, and they chant some mantras, and come out as youths, The whole world would join, would come to our movement if we could do that. All the old people come in 82 years old and go away as 22 years old. We'd be very popular movement. What is the qualification to wear Kunti Mala? Well, somebody who's seriously following, there's no hard and fast rule, but it, you know, generally each temple has some policies. There's no hard and fast rules in Prabhupada, but I know it myself was a standard, and I tell my aspiring disciples, you can wear two strands, but initiation. Three after initiation, it's just to set some standards so you can see who's initiated and who isn't. So we encourage wearing Kunti Mala, anybody who's following our principles and chanting some rounds. If you're chanting some japa and you're following the principles, yeah, wear Kunti Mala. But in my own preaching, three strands for after initiation. So we can easily distinguish. I can look at you and see if you're initiated or not by your neck beads. See, in the Vedic culture, everybody's designated in a certain way, so you don't understand how to deal with them. Even the parting of the hair. The chaste women would part their hair in the middle, and the prostitutes would part their hair on the side. You see? And that was the standard custom in Vedic culture. So you know a woman is a prostitute or she's a chaste lady. You know how to deal with her properly. You see? So it's a good reminder for all our ladies, make sure to part your hair in the middle, not on the side, like the Western women do often. Okay, so looks like we're out of time and we're out of questions.
Question.
All right.
You said we can wear, we are changing some rounds and following the religious principle, whatever eating.
About doing what? For wearing neck beads, what should be the eating standard? Well, ideally, they only take prasadam. Someone who's not eating, who's eating bhogas, should be a nice standard. I would suggest that our standard would be that if you're eating only prasadam and you're chanting some rounds and find the principles, then you can wear some neck beads, one or two strands. That would be a good standard. If you're eating bhoga, it's better not to wear neck beads. Yeah, that's a good standard. Yeah. Okay, anybody else? Any last questions here? Just one more? Okay, that's it. No more. All right. Is it true that when Prabhupada allowed 16 rounds instead of 64, he prayed to Krishna that if I have any devotional service to you, please give these devotees credit of 64 rounds by chanting 16 rounds only. I never heard that. I never heard that one. But we have trouble even chanting 16 rounds. We're so fallen. The pure devotee can adjust such thing. Prabhupada and someone of Prabhupada's caliber is able to adjust. Now, some other gurus we've seen, not in ISKCON, but those outside of ISKCON, they say, well, you can chant four rounds. We don't accept this thing. The actual standard is 64, and Prabhupada, as a concession, said 16. But that has to remain a solid standard now. The next 10,000 years of Kali Yuga, 16 rounds minimum. Not that you can say, well, you can do four, or you can do two, I'll initiate you. No, that's bogus. 16 rounds has to be maintained. That's the end. At least, Prabhupada always said, at least 16 rounds. That's the minimum. That's not that you have to, not that you have to stop after 16, you can keep chanting. Chanting is enchanting. So why not keep chanting? Get more mercy. Okay, so we'll stop here, and we thank you all very, very much for your dedication to this movement. Please try to cultivate pure bhakti within your heart at every minute, and always think and act and speak for the benefit of all the living entities who are suffering in this material existence. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.